Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
George W. Bush was on vacation, according to the Washington Post, 42% of the time.
Mr. Bush marked 365 days at the presidential retreat on Friday, January 12th.
George Bush clearing brush.
George W. Bush has made 65 visits to his Crawford, Texas ranch.
Just before marking his sixth year in office, President Bush marked a full year of time spent at Camp David.
Is that too many?
It's a lot of days.
It's a lot of days.
You'd think he'd have all that brush cleared off with more than 2 years off.
I've canceled my travel today to stay in Washington.
All right, what you're listening to is the vermin in the media attacking George Bush for having taken vacations during his presidency. And, of course, now that Saint Obama has taken his vacation in Martha's Vineyard, there is comments such as, hush, hush, my darling. He has done so much good for America. We must let him get his rest. I guess the point is, whatever you want to make the point is, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We have a group of things that I'd like to talk about today on the Savage Nation, including the delicate topic of Teddy Kennedy's actual legacy. I realize that it's impolite to discuss the man's actual legacy, number one, and also to discuss it at such a sensitive time such as this. But if you care to join in, we can do that. In fact, the Brits, you understand there's no monolithic Brit. There's a British press, some of which is extremely liberal and some of which is not liberal. And there's a gentleman named Gerald Warner who wrote the following. More people were killed at Chappaquiddick than at Three Mile Island. And it's a car bumper sticker, he says, that says it all. And he opens his article, Gerald Warner does, with this. Senator, you were expelled from Harvard for cheating. Then you left the woman to drown in your car at Chappaquiddick. What makes you think you have what it takes to be president? And he says that was the opening question of an interview with the late Senator Edward Kennedy during his unsuccessful bid to secure the Democratic nomination for the U.S. presidency. He said it might equally now serve as an obituary. He says the answer to that embarrassing question, of course, can be given in one word, entitlement. The Kennedy dynasty has long assumed a divine right to high office and privilege that accords ill with the spirit of the American Constitution. Now, remember, I'm not saying these things. This is written by Gerald Warner of England. I guess he's allowed to do it because he's not controlled by the Obama press corps. And he says, the Kennedy dynasty has long assumed a divine right to high office and privilege that accords ill with the spirit of the American Constitution. We saw it yet again earlier this year with the attempt to shoo in the totally inexperienced Caroline Kennedy as successor to Hillary Clinton representing New York in the Senate. It failed. The Kennedy clan, as used to be said of effete Chinese dynasties, has exhausted the mandate of heaven. Now, as you well know, the liberal establishment is in overdrive. You know the liberal establishment is attacking anyone who dares bring up the actual realities, not only of Mr. Kennedy, who just passed, but his family as well. But he doesn't forget any of this. He says in Britain, Kennedy will be remembered for his championing of IRA terror on the same knee-jerk anti-British principles that inspired his father, Ambassador Joseph Kennedy, to support Hitler. Wow. And he said, yet Kennedy was awarded an honorary knighthood just as America gave him its Presidential Medal of Freedom. What for? For being a Kennedy, of course. The Kennedy humbug was incisively deflated by a Republican bumper sticker that memorably claimed, quote, more people were killed at Chappaquiddick than at Three Mile Island. Another succinctly said, no one drowned at Watergate. Now, let me finish this from Gerald Warner, even though my sound connector. My Telos is disconnected, and no one's connecting it for me. I'll continue reading this from Gerald Warner from England, because he's allowed to write it. He's not an American talk show host. And he says, what is it that motivates people in so-called democratic societies to create reverential myths around hollow idols with feet of clay? America, he writes, is the one country on earth where only the rich are socialists. That East Coast tribe will now indulge in false hero worship and wild hyperbole about a man who, if his surname had been anything other than Kennedy, would have provoked widespread distaste and social ostracism. This time the liberal elite is burying not just an individual, but the political aspirations of a dynasty whose objectives were incompatible with the best interest of America. So writes Gerald Warner, an author, broadcaster, columnist, and polemical commentator from England. See, they understand what polemical commentator means. Apparently in America, the word polemics was not taught in Journalism 101. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. The website is michaelsavage.com. If you care to talk to me, that's the only way to reach me. Otherwise, I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to continue talking to you while we're looking for you here on my Telos system, which has been somehow sabotaged just before the show, as my email has been sabotaged. My Telos has been sabotaged. My programs have been sabotaged. First, the website was hacked. Now the Telos is hacked, and my email is hacked, and my internet is hacked. So let's do this. Let us go to the liberal elite, so-called, in the form of one Doug Brinkley, who is apparently some type of historian, who refers to Ted Kennedy as a form of Ubermensch. Now, I've got to add something to this. This is a liberal historian, Doug Brinkley, who refers to Ted Kennedy as an Ubermensch. Do you know where Ubermensch comes from? And do you know what that means, people who are not Kennedy are? Listen to this.
The fact of having dogs with him and playing catch all the time and going to see Ted Kennedy, always felt like you were going to see a kind of Ubermensch. He was so nice to young people or people who were upwards in their careers and had questions. I'm impressed historically about his Senate office. It became, during the 1960s and 70s protest period in Washington, D.C., kind of the place, if you got tear gassed, you'd go to his office to get water and recoup.
Isn't that nice? So here is a so-called liberal historian who is calling the late Senator Kennedy a sort of Ubermensch. Do you know where the word Ubermensch comes from? Well, and do you know what the opposite of Ubermensch is? It was certainly clearly defined by a gentleman in Germany in the 1930s. And if Ted Kennedy is a form of Ubermensch, what does that make you? 1-800-449-8255 makes you a caller to the Savage Nation. And I'll be right back to take your calls.
Savage.
Well, if you look at ratings, apparently the Kennedy legacy, Ted Kennedy tribute, had very poor ratings last night on ABC. People preferred ABC's Wipeout and a show called Bones over Ted Kennedy, the last brother. And apparently America's Next Top Model did better than Ted Kennedy, the last brother. And let's see, at 10 p.m., a Law and Order episode beat Remembering Ted Kennedy. So, I mean, if you want to put ratings, you know, I realize that ratings are not written for or not based upon the Ubermensches. The Ubermensches, of course, would be offended by the fact that there was even any show on other than a tribute to Ted Kennedy. You've got to remember that. The Ubermensches know more than you do. And the important thing is to look forward to the day when the men working for Obama, previous street felons and thugs who are now inside the White House with white shirts and ties, once they get control of the FCC, soon there will be nothing permitted except tributes to Democrats and tributes to Democrat programs. And at that point, of course, the ratings will be super high and it'll prove that the people love them. So we only have a few months or years to wait for those days. But to be fair to the discussion, I will let you decide what Ted Kennedy's true legacy is. I mean, he wasn't all bad. Some would demonize him and say because he killed a young girl at Chappaquiddick, he's all bad. Or he cheated at Harvard. by using a poor student to take an exam for him, and the poor student got thrown out, as did Kennedy, but Kennedy was allowed in while the poor student was never allowed back in. That sort of defines him. But you can't let that stick to a man for the rest of his life. He was welcome in Britain right until the very end. Even though he killed an actual girl, he was welcome in Britain. He didn't create any intercommunity violence when he said in 1965 that the Kennedy Immigration Reform Act of 1965 would not change the demographics of America. That didn't create any intercommunity tension in this country, and that's why Jackie Smith permits him into England to this day. It's a matter of politics as to what really creates intercommunity tension, not a matter of what actually does it. And while the British government might release an actual terrorist who killed 260 people, a true terrorist, it's important to make sure that somebody who expresses conservative opinion is declared the real terrorist. Because that's the way Ubermensch work. And since the rest of us are not considered to be worthy of the discussion to begin with, we shouldn't even be considered Untermenschen. We're not even Untermenschen. We're no mention. We're no mention. We're not Mensch, and we're not mentioned. Now, what am I talking about? Doug Brinkley, a so-called historian who I never heard of. I know of a David Brinkley who used to do the news when I was a boy eating lamb chops. I never heard of Doug Brinkley, but apparently he's some kind of important historian for liberals along the lines, I suppose, of Doris Kearns Goodwin, a favorite of NPR who was caught plagiarizing books herself, but didn't stop NPR and Bill Maher and us from having her on as a historian of some kind, even though she's a plagiarist. She's still an historian because she's an historian of the Ubermensch. And he referred to Ted Kennedy as an Ubermensch. I guess that means everyone else is an Untermensch. So what is Ted Kennedy's actual legacy is the question. Is there anybody who has anything to say about this, positive, negative? You can call. Because no one's all of one thing. Let's be clear. As I say, just because he cheated at Harvard and got thrown out, just because he killed a young lady and ran away and didn't discover he killed a lady until the next day, just because he destroyed America through massive immigration fraud, which has given the Democrats a perennial foot up in the elections, just because he gave us various acts which, of course, have undermined the taxpayer in this country, does not make him all bad. In fact, to the Ubermensch, it makes him all good. But there's something you should ask yourself. Why is it that a man of privilege with so much money is so in favor of doing things for the poor and underprivileged? Do you think it is out of altruism, or do you think that there's something to be gained from it? Why is it that Nancy Pelosi, amongst the richest women in Congress, why is she so concerned about the rights of illegal aliens who are not citizens? And let's go to the next step. Why, it seems to me, I ask this question over and over again, because I can't put two and two together. I'm not an Obermensch, after all. I'm only a talk show host, merely a shock jock, so I don't have their intelligence nor their background. I realize some of them even went to college, and although I have a real PhD and have written over 25 books, it doesn't really count. And the reason it doesn't really count is because historians like Doris Kearns Goodwin say that only the Obermensch's degrees and such account. So my work doesn't count. But I still ask these questions, even though I have the inability to figure them out. Why are the richest people in Congress, liberal Democrats, and why are they always giving benefits to illegal aliens, the homeless, junkies, and other basic, let us say, well, let's just leave it at that. We'll pause at that point. That's a good question. But what's Kennedy's legacy is the issue. I realize we're not allowed to talk about it, and it's in bad taste to do so, but you must forgive us, those of us who are not Ubermensch, because Ubermensch play by certain rules. The rest of us don't. You have to be someone from a noble background. Now, although my father was not a rum runner, and although my father did not make his fortune by bringing in whiskey from England, and although my father was not an ambassador to England, and although my father did not do business with Hitler, I have trouble because of those things. Had my father been a rum runner, and had my father been a cohort of Adolf Hitler in the 1930s, and things of that nature, perhaps I would see the world through the eyes of an Ubermensch, and I wouldn't ask such impolite questions at a very sensitive time such as this in American history. But because I'm not of such an esteemed background as that, I am an immigrant's son, after all, and we all worked so very hard. That's all we know how to do, is work and try to do the right thing. And that's why we're not Ubermensch. Ubermensch play by different rules than we do. And so forgive me for these impolite questions at this delicate time in America's mourning period where onions are being put in handkerchiefs across the halls of Congress right now. I hear that there's a big sale of onions now amongst aides to put in handkerchiefs around the halls of Congress. Georgia, GL, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, sir. If anybody else would have put an automobile off a bridge and killed somebody, there'd been a lot more questions.
Now, look, again, I'm not an Obermensch, so I'm allowed to ask these questions and make these statements. But it's a very indelicate thing to point out, but he actually ran away from the scene of the accident and let the girl drown in the car.
Well, he had to ask his minions what to say.
Well, he came back the next day with his public relations agent and his lawyers. At that point, Mary Jo was dead. A state trooper gave a sworn statement the next day saying if they had known about the accident and had been able to get there within 25 minutes, they might have been able to save her. I don't think the way an Obermensch does. An Obermensch thinks only of himself because the family name must be preserved and future political, aspirations must be preserved. I mean, look, if you want to break an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. She was just an egg in the wrong car. And who is she? No one ever heard of her. So therefore, what does it really matter? Look at the good he's gone on to do. You wouldn't have wanted any of that stopped, would you? And what about being thrown out of Harvard for having hired a poor kid to take his exams for him? Now, it's true he was caught and thrown out of Harvard, but what you don't know is that he was let back into Harvard with a little help from his friends. But the poor kid who took his exams never went back to Harvard. Lucky him. Or else he'd be another idiot who graduated Harvard and couldn't make a living and had to sit in pajamas and send emails to people. So if you care to talk about this amongst ourselves, we can do it. I'm sure the Ubermenschen are not listening. After all, I don't exist, and the show doesn't exist, so we're sort of free to talk amongst ourselves. We, the impolite non-Ubermensch of America, the Ubermensch are right now wringing onions inside handkerchiefs, seeing if they can exploit this, what's the word that he used, that Rahm Emanuel character from Chicago, never miss a crisis to try to advance the agenda. Well, we know what that means. Us little people know what that means. This is a crisis that they're going to use to try to advance socialized medicine, all in the name of the Obermensch.
Savage.
Obama is silent during his vacation, as is the press corps, because he needs a good rest. He's done such good work so far, bailing out Goldman Sachs and things of that nature, and not prosecuting individuals who were, let's say, in the crosshairs of the federal government for having done weird things, and people who should be in the crosshairs of the federal government, they haven't been targeted because he's done such good work in such a short period of time. He deserves a good quiet rest on Martha's Vineyard. As I say, if we still had investigative reporting, a young reporter would be out there with a pencil and a pad writing down the tail numbers of the jets that are flying in and out of Martha's Vineyard. That's assuming they have a jet port. I've not been there myself. It's reserved only for the Obermensch and the maids and the gardeners who work on the Obermensch's estates. But they must have a jet port. And I would imagine that if you wrote down the tail numbers of the jets flying in and out of Martha's Vineyard, while the great one is there, you could probably figure out who's doing a deal or two. And I don't think that they should have to come by train or by, let us say, ferry or anything like that, because those are the Obermensch. They need efficiency, and time is money to them. And you shouldn't worry about whose tail number has landed and whose tail is being tucked on Martha's Vineyard, so to speak. The important thing is to make certain that the president is given quiet time with his family. No, you just harassed poor George Bush for chopping wood at Crawford for 8 straight years. I noticed that Glenn Beck, while crying last night, scored top ratings. My hat's off to you, Glenn, crying about the First Amendment and having the golfer on with you. Good job. I got a kick out of it while enjoying a cocktail last night. Nice performance, Glenn. Crying about losing everything because of the First Amendment and how you prefer free speech with Blowhard, Rushy the Blowhard. The two of you have discovered that there's a free speech issue. Really? Well, I, as the first victim of McCarthyism in America, in this period, of course. Now, the liberals talk about McCarthyism as though it was horrible and real. Well, it wasn't actually horrible, but it was real. There was McCarthyism, but he actually did root out real communists who really were linked to the Soviet Union in the 1950s. But let's put aside the fact that to the left, McCarthyism is very real. But of course, now that they're practicing McCarthyism here in the United States of America, it doesn't matter. Because what matters is who's pulling Charlie McCarthy's strings, not whether or not Charlie McCarthy is talking. But Glenn, good job to you and Rush for talking about freedom of speech without talking about the number one freedom of speech issue in America today, which is Michael Savage having been banned in Britain. I got to hand it to you, Glenn. The ability to pull that off with crocodile tears, my hat's off to you, Glenn. Good entertainment. 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. How do you feel about Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh going on television yesterday talking about how the Obama administration is out to get him and saying nothing about Michael Savage being banned in Britain? Does that bother you at all? Does it bother you at all to see the hypocrisy of the corporate talk show hosts Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh? Now, let me tell you something. There is a reason for all of this. I am syndicated by an independent syndicator who is not in any sense a major corporation. Maybe he will be one day. Maybe he knows them. But you see, Limbaugh and Beck are part of corporate talk. And whether you believe it or not, it doesn't really matter whether the corporate talk is left or right. There is a club. And corporate talk only talks about others within the corporate talk fraternity. And so although Michael Savage has been actually banned in Britain, although Michael Savage is actually the first victim of McCarthyism in this period, although Michael Savage is actually the first victim of such things, that didn't matter to Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. What's important is what might happen to Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, not what actually did happen to Michael Savage. And that's the beauty of it. The beauty is that they can get away with it because the people themselves don't even see the hypocrisy. And now you understand what corporate broadcasting is as opposed to independent broadcasting. So here I am. What would you like to talk about? Kennedy, this, that, the media, the double talk, vacations, Doug Brinkley referring to Ted Kennedy as a form of Ubermensch. How about a little montage of talking heads referring to the political greatness of Ted Kennedy? Let's hear O2.
The tributes are pouring in from around the world for Senator Kennedy. He has lost his battle with brain cancer. The man known as the Lion of the Senate passing away.
The greatest, I suppose, most prolific senator when it comes to legislation in the history of this republic.
The liberal Lion of the Senate.
Going to see Ted Kennedy, always felt like you were going to see a kind of a uber mensch. He was so nice to young people or people who were upwards in their careers and had questions.
Kennedy's voice, his presence, his force has been deeply felt.
He was considered one of the most effective lawmakers
of
the past.
We heard it all. Thank you very much. The ratings indicate that people don't believe it and they don't care. He was also detested by more Americans than any other senator for reasons that you could pretty much put together. I mean, after all, the women's movement came about the same time that Mary Jo Kopechne was left to drown in a car. Imagine dying like that. And they've said nothing about that because, well, the rules don't apply to Ubermensch. They have certain privileges that the rest of us don't have. If you look at a woman at work the wrong way, you get sued because you're not an Ubermensch. If, on the other hand, you let one to drown in a car, you get away with it because, after all, you're advancing the Chavez agenda here in America. Let's see, what else do we have here on the Savage Nation for the listening public interested in polemics and reality? Let us see. Obama needs a break from his vacation, that we know. 1,000 banks to fail. Really? How are they going to prop that up? CIA report. Oh, did you hear about this? The CIA used secondhand smoke as a form of torture. That's right. Some of our CIA agents had the nerve to blow smoke in the face of the Islamic fascists that they were quizzing. And, of course, that really should result, I would think, in 20 years in prison. I mean, the ACLU probably going to run after them because you know smoke is toxic. Secondhand smoke is very, very toxic. And to blow that in the smoke of a man who would smoke an entire city, I mean, it's just unheard of. After all, we're better than that. I mean, isn't that the liberal credo? We're better than them, therefore we can't resort to their type of behavior? And they don't even mean cutting off heads and things like that while chanting to God. They mean just blowing smoke in a terrorist's face is a terrible thing to do. I mean, he might wind up sneezing or coughing. And who knows, there might even be some kind of religious prohibition against blowing secondhand smoke in the face of a religious man. I don't know. You have to turn to the Ubermensch at the ACLU to find out just exactly how offensive that might be to a religious terrorist. You don't know. And as you well know, religion trumps, their religion trumps your religion because, well, it's just a very good way to control you. So there it is. Let's see what else is on michaelsavage.com. I haven't really looked at the website today. I've been busy eating Indian food for lunch and went to a buffet over 8. I always say to myself, don't go to the buffets. You know what's going to happen. You're going to eat that second, third plate. I ate the fourth plate. You know what's going to happen. You're making believe you're going there for the rice and the vegetarian, then you're going to eat the lamb, and I did 3 times. Because you say to yourself, well, the lamb is dead anyway. It doesn't matter. The poor thing's dead. And you do a Hail Mary over the lamb 3 or 4 times. It's unbelievable. This is how you cheat on your diet, is you go to buffets and you go back 3 or 4 times. That's what matters to me at this phase of my life. Is my mother used to say it was Italian or Chinese at the end of her years. Now, I'm not anywhere near the end of my years. It is true. I'm putting together the Savage Library. I have someone archiving every radio tape I've ever saved going back to 1994. What a job. You'd think I was crazy. I have radio tapes going back to when I was a local host because I knew that there was gold in them Nor Hills in them Knob tapes. And manuscripts, after all, I've only written 25 books, most of them in longhand. And the manuscripts must be worth something. I realize that I'm not as famous as a man who drowned a girl in a car, but there might be a buyer out there for such an estate. You never know. Might be worth a few pennies now and again. All of the handwritten manuscripts, the notes, the letters, the audio tapes going back to 1994, things of that nature. So in my own non-Ubermensch way, I'm trying to put these things together. And I mean, that's what I've been doing sort of on the side here. So no, don't expect me to get too excited about Ted Kennedy, nor to bash him. I mean, look, you know what the story is already. He was a kid born into a rich family. He was the party boy of the family, probably the least, had the least luster of the three brothers. And he inherited the mantle, and he pushed the far-left agenda. Pushed the far-left agenda. He did some terrible things. And to the liberals, he's an icon because he advanced the socialist agenda. To the American people, though, who are not liberal, they're kind of offended by all of the onions and handkerchiefs that we're seeing now, simply being used in order to advance socialized medicine. So what else do you want to talk about? We can talk about that, but let's go to some other topics. How about Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh talking about freedom of speech being threatened by Obama and refusing to discuss Michael Savage twisting in the wind since May 5th being banned in Britain? Do you think that makes Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck hypocrites to any extent, or are they incapable of hypocrisy because they declare themselves not to be liberals? Is that possible, that they themselves declare themselves to be Ubermensch in some ways because they're not liberals, and in so doing they could actually think that you're stupid and you don't see the glaring hypocrisy in them squeezing onions and handkerchiefs yesterday, talking about freedom of speech being threatened by Obama and his minions without once... not once mentioning true conservative, patriot, Michael Savage? How is that possible? How did they get away with this? San Diego, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Mike. I think they get away with it because it's a script. They're reading from a script, and they have to educate the public on what they're told to educate us on, and I refuse to believe it. When a very popular radio host like yourself is banned from a foreign country, it is really, really a hypocritical thing to even avoid it, let alone talk around it. I stayed up to watch that show last night and ended up turning it off in disgust.
Well, I watched it. I was drinking. I took the afternoon off. I wasn't feeling well, but I had great entertainment watching the two circus clowns put on the act about the First Amendment. I truly enjoyed them talking about freedom of speech and saying, my goodness, there's something missing in this discussion.
Well, there was
sort of a pregnant emptiness in the whole discussion of freedom of speech being threatened. I said, goodness, they never heard of Michael Savage and banned in Britain? How's that possible?
I think it's possible because they have one agenda. They keep saying Democrats bad, Republicans good, and they don't see the trees in the forest.
Well, I don't know. We do our best to get out our message here on the Savage Nation. All I know is that millions of people who listen to this show understand that true McCarthyism exists. It has reared its head, in this country. And the fact of the matter is there's collusion between the U.S. government in the Obama administration, or possibly even going back to the Bush administration, and the Labor government in England in having me targeted and put on a list with murderers and terrorists. You would think that a man so concerned with freedom of speech as the golfer would know that. After all, he knows everything. Thank you for the call. Incidentally, you can see what I've written in part by going to michaelsavage.com. I haven't promoted the book at all this week because I'm about to go to press. I would say we're going to send it to the printer next week. So if you want a copy, you really should order it. I mean, the big sales are going to come after Labor Day. And by that point, I think the first printing is going to be set. I would say get your name on the list for the first printing, first edition. It's the same exact situation as remember psychological nudity was the same thing last year? I kept saying first edition, first printing. It's going to go, and then it did. Then it was the first edition, second printing. You know, okay, whatever. Say, well, what is it worth? 10 cents more? I don't know what it's worth. I was going through my archives today because the archivist needs all the tapes, and I uncovered mountains of tapes from 1994, 95, 96 when I was a local host. But leave it there on tape. These are on actual audio tapes. I used to drive them crazy at the station and make the poor engineers record these shows, and I would put little wrappers around them with handwritten notes. Like today I talked about Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick. That was in 94. I was still things of that nature. Immigration out of control, 94, 95. While Glenn Beck was in rehab, I guess I was still talking. I don't really know, but all these notes are on. And I discovered old coins. Would you believe it? I found boxes and boxes of Morgan silver dollars, Indian head cents. Then I stumbled upon some things owned by my children in storage. God, like junior high school report cards and journals that I had them keep when we take them on ocean trips when they were in school. I remember we used to take them on trips and take them out of school because there was a credo that your child will learn more on a cruise on an ocean liner in traveling and experiences than he will in the sixth or seventh or eighth grade. Well, that was a liberal credo. They wouldn't say that anymore because liberals don't travel with their children. They're too busy traveling with themselves so they can switch hit with each other while they're on the road, and the children are left at home with a house sitter with Ritalin. But we actually traveled with our children on ocean liners, and I found the journals, they're very touching. Usually the child, it's very much out of Mark Twain, it's very cute. The journals, I say, okay, look, son, here's what we're going to do. We're going on a trip for 4 weeks in December. You're going to be out of school. I'm going to miss 2 weeks, 3 weeks of school. But I'll tell you what, you're going to keep a journal of every port we go to. That's when I was collecting plants in the South Pacific, Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Palmyras. I mean, amazing places. And I said, and if you meet interesting people on the ship, you're going to make notes of it. And birds, you're going to make notes of birds that you see and things that, sure, Dad, great, love it. And the first day, they sit at the table, you know, the card table, while the people are somewhere else up in the dining room, and they write. You look at the journal 20 years later, it's only two pages are dutifully entered, and then the rest are blank because kids are kids. They were busy living and enjoying themselves instead of writing down a stupid journal that nobody would ever read. They actually were looking at the birds. They actually were running on the decks of the ship. God bless them. I'm glad they didn't keep a journal. But those first two pages were really well. Good penmanship was great. No, those are the days. You know that my bar bills, I still have some of the bar bills from those ships. My bar bills for wine and drinks were higher than my rent was. They used to charge you. There's nothing else to do in a ship other than drink. That's the big secret of why people go on. Well, you see, in those days, ships were a little different than they are today. Today, they're floating Las Vegas hotels. What they are is like a Motel 6 with propellers today. You can't even walk on a ship and enjoy the air without some kind of Muzak driving you indoors so that you gamble or buy some garbage that you could buy in Target for less money, for example. But in the days that I began traveling on ships, I traveled on some of the last great ships, the Oriana. In fact, I just found some artifacts from the Canberra, the Oriana. These were amazing ocean liners that were used for actual transport as opposed to being simply a floating brothel. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's a great article that Matt Towery wrote for Creative Syndicate, True Savage Released While Savage Talk Host Banned. Good article because it's about me, number one, of course. If I'm not for myself, who will be, as you well know, wouldn't be Becca Rush. But if I'm only for me, what am I? I mean, I'll just be a savage. So therefore, I must say it's a great article. You've got to read it on michaelsavage.com. And I was thinking about something. Because I'm putting together my archives, I'm serious. I have a question. Pardon me for leaving the news for a moment. But this is a talk show, and since it's a talk show, we talk about things other than the news, even though the news is very important and things of that nature. But we talk about other things, particularly if you're a great conversationalist as I am, and being a Renaissance man as I am, I can talk about most everything with some degree of knowledge. Is there anyone listening to this show who is not an executor, but an appraiser of literary estates? Let me put it to you that way. I've written 25 books, right? So I have manuscripts, cartons, mementos. Then I have 15 years of tapes, radio tapes. They have to be worth a fortune because once I get this all put together and insured, I'm probably going to either sell it off or build a library and then donate all the money to charity. I have some idea of what this is worth, and I'm not going to throw the number out, but I want a genuine appraiser to call the show. I don't know how they do these things. I mean, they say that, let's say, Jack Kerouac's estate is worth $20 to $25 million. Now, he was a really great writer, and it contained his first manuscript for On the Road with a teletype roll and all of that, and then the family's fighting over the estate and blah, blah, blah. How do you determine what something is worth? I have millions of listeners, and I have several million readers of my books, so therefore, there's a value. It's a matter of what the value is, and I don't know how you come to these terms. Or I'll just build a library. I have an idea for that. And the centerpiece will be the 1965 Cadillac, which right now has its fuel tank removed because apparently something broke in it. And the center thing will be the 65 Caddy with American flags on it when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. And then around it will be all sorts of artifacts and such from the Savage years. Sort of different than the Kennedy legacy, wouldn't you say?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now, the reason I played that first one of Joe and Paul in a Yiddish ad is because the word Ubermensch was used today by a historian of some repute I've never heard of, Doug Brinkley, who referred to Ted Kennedy as a form of Ubermensch. And, of course, if you hear the word Ubermensch, you immediately think of Untermensch. And if you know what an Untermensch is, why, then immediately you think of Joe and Paul for some reason. At least that's how my mind works. I don't know about yours. I don't know how in the world they can call Ted Kennedy an Ubermensch without understanding that it means someone else who is not an Ubermensch is an Untermensch. And, then, of course, then you have moved into the lexicon of old Adolf. How could a great liberal historian such as Doug Brinkley, who I've never heard of, refer to Ted Kennedy as a form of Ubermensch? Did you hear this? Listen to this. Play it.
The fact of having dogs with him and playing catch all the time and going to see Ted Kennedy, he always felt like you were going to see a kind of Ubermensch. He was so nice to young people.
And of course, okay, we got it. Ubermensch. And of course, the talk show host from MSNBC, who is a nobody, snickered at that. That sounded good. The word Ubermensch made him happy because it sounded smart and somehow sophisticated. And while he himself doesn't know what the word means, he knows that anyone as esteemed as Doug Brinkley, whoever he may be, is much smarter than him, and therefore it's certainly worthy of a snicker, which is what they all do on MSNBC. They snicker a lot, all except for Pat Buchanan, who never snickered. He just stepped on people's arches in grade school. So here we are. What would you like to talk about? Play the Philip Morris thing for me. I'm not in the mood to do politics right now. I think I'll do nostalgia. I think I figured out why I've been banned in Britain. It may not actually be statements that they said I made, which I didn't make. It could be because I wrote psychological nudity. And in psychological nudity, there are stories that could be offensive to the Obermensch of Britain, the liberals of Britain. For example, there is the story of the tough high school geometry teacher with two fingers on his right hand, who was a tough guy, and he was an Irishman. And there may be a reason that the British banned me that is related to this story, for all I know. And then, of course, I wrote about happy and sad cufflinks that I had as a child. And that could be offensive to a liberal government when you think about it. Because if you put children on Prozac, they're neither happy nor sad. They're flatlined all the time, so they can be easily manipulated by Gordon Brown. And so, therefore, if I write a story called Happy and Sad Cufflinks, and I remind people that we actually have emotions once we throw our drugs away, that's a threat to a liberal nation, and that could be a reason I was banned in Britain. And so I'm looking through the stories now, and I think I'm going to next purge some of these stories in an attempt to be taken off the list, banned in Britain. Here's another one. My dog Tippy died and was thrown into a garbage truck on page 21. Now, that's offensive to a liberal, and I think that may be the reason I'm banned in Britain. What if I read that in England? What if I'd gone on a book tour in England, I read Tippy dies and is thrown into a garbage truck? That could be a shock to the British today. Dead man's pants. There you go again. Making a mockery of using clothing from dead people. And somehow that's offensive to the dead. So that has to go out of the story. Here's another one. Nutty friend had crazy mother. You can't call anyone's mother crazy, even though she beat herself on the hands and wrists with a chain and then told his father that he did it in order to make the father fight the son. That could be offensive to a liberal government. Now, there's one-armed Frank. Now, look at that story on page 43 of Psychological Nudity. That could be the reason I was banned in Britain by the liberal government. Look at that story, one-armed Frank. You can't say a thing like that in England today. You may offend people with one arm. You have to pretend that there are no people with one arms, particularly those who came back from Afghanistan and Iraq who lost their arms for no reason whatsoever. Then this one must have been. This could be the one. Half man, half woman in Long Beach. That unto itself could be the reason that I was banned in Britain. And you never know. And then there's, of course, well, there are other stories in there that you may not want to read anymore. Because, well, there's another one, the Islamists are winning. There you go. There's a reason for banning me from England. Islamists are winning. Here's another one. Plastic bags are banned in San Francisco, but not condoms. Now, that's a threat to the social order in a liberal government. That's another reason to ban the book. So I would suggest that you, if you have a copy of this, I don't know, maybe you should bury it in your backyard with your guns. Because once they come for the Second Amendment, once they win on that, they'll come for the First Amendment. Now, it is true they've already come for the First Amendment through their friends in England. But don't tell that to Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh. They're acting as though they're the first victims because they've lost advertisers. Of course, what happens if you're actually banned by a nation? Oh, my God. Well, you don't talk about it if you're part of corporate America and part of corporate radio and television and corporate media. You certainly don't mention an actual talk show host that was banned by a nation. So what would you like me to talk about? I'm just having fun today. That's all. It's summertime. I've got the summertime giddiness. Most normal people are not even listening to the radio today. If you're listening, it means you're not normal. It really means that. If you're actually listening to this show on a hot Thursday, August 27, 2009, it means you probably have troubles in your life. Because actually, you should be somewhere. You should either be at Martha's Vineyard trying to get a look at Obama somehow. Even if you can't see him, actually, you can say you almost saw somebody who saw him. Or you could be at the airport at Martha's Vineyard writing down the tail numbers of the planes that are not there, of the people from Goldman Sachs and Citibank flying in and out to see what they can get out of the administration next. You know, I mean, you could be doing things like that if you were. But since you're not a normal person, you're listening to talk radio on a hot Thursday, we can just talk amongst ourselves because we are not the Ubermensch of the kind of that this Brinkley character talks about with Ted Kennedy. or Howard Dean. He's certainly an Ubermensch. He would be. Wouldn't Howard Dean be an Ubermensch? Or Chuck Schumer's an Ubermensch. He's got big feet. Is shoe size got something to do with Ubermensch or the amount of alcohol that you can consume? What actually makes somebody an Ubermensch? This historian referred to Ted Kennedy as a form of Ubermensch when talking about him as a person. Would Chuck Schumer qualify as an Ubermensch because of his shoe size? Would Howard Dean qualify as an Ubermensch because of his, well, let's leave it go at that. It is a family show. And now we have Arianna Huffington, another wonderful prize lover of the poor, even though she herself married a rich man in order to take his name and his money. Arianna Huffington talks about the death of Ted Kennedy and how it's a moral imperative to pass the health care reform for him. Now, why would Arianna Huffington, a woman who married for money and took the man's name, be caring so much about health care reform? Can anybody figure that out? Let's hear clip 7.
Senator Kennedy passed the torch, the JFK torch, the Kennedy torch.
Wait a minute, did she say he passed the torch? But I thought this woman was a prize debater. Did she say that that Ted Kennedy passed the torch? Can anyone call the show and tell me what a torch is? What in the world is a torch? Beowulf, do you know what a torch is? Play that again. I want to hear what a torch is.
Senator Kennedy passed the torch, the JFK torch.
All right, yeah, she
torch,
passed the torch. She
Obama.
Passed the torch. All right, take a walk. Take a walk. You pretended you were a Republican before you got married, and then yeah, after the money came flowing in, you got the name and the gelt, and then moved on, the gelt and the pelt, boom. And then we got a lot of things to talk about since we're Ubermensch. I mean, not Ubermensch. We can talk about these things. Here's Senator John McCain yelling at a disruptive woman. Let's hear clip 14.
You're going to have to stop or you're going to have to leave. This woman right there, please. Goodbye. See ya.
All right. That's heroic, John. Wow, that's heroic. That really makes you hot stuff. The McCain-Kennedy immigration reform bill was really something too, John. That really helped your presidency. The McCain-Kennedy, this bill, the McCain-Kennedy, that bill. Angry crowd at Virginia Town Hall goes nuts when Rep. Jim Moran demands to see an audience member's ID before allowing him to answer. Who is Jim Moran? Is he a D or an R? He's a D. Well, the Democrats have a right to ask for someone's ID. That's the way Obermensch do it. I mean, in Adolf's land, all of the Obermensch demanded to see certain IDs and party membership. Why should Jim Moran not ask to see someone's ID at a town hall meeting? He's a Democrat. That's the way they work. Eventually, you're going to have to show a card. Not a union card. I mean, a party card, the way they did in old Germany in the 30s. If you weren't a member of the party, you couldn't get a job. If you weren't a member of the party, you couldn't vote. In fact, if you didn't have a party card, you were put on a railroad car to go work somewhere for nothing. So I can understand why Representative Jim Moran demands to see an audience member's ID card. Let's hear Jim Moran. Well, that's just screaming. No, please, those are people screaming at a politician, a Democrat. That's not permitted. Jim Moran said we wouldn't be going to war in Iraq if it weren't for Israel. After all, he knows these things. That's why he asks for members' IDs before allowing them to ask a question. He's an Obermensch. See, there's Obermensch, and then there's the rest of us. And if you're not an Obermensch, it means you're an Untermensch. And if you're an Untermensch, well, you know what happens to you, don't you? It's coming soon. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Trying to figure out, does anybody know what a dorch is? Because she's a member of the Obermensch class, and if she says dorch, maybe it's a code word for the Dorchester Hotel and some code words about England. I don't get it. Did she say that he passed the dorch? Let me hear that one more time.
Senator Kennedy passed the torch.
Dorch, see? The dorch. Passed the dorch. The dorch. Senator, why do they all care? The rich people care about the poor so much, and the rest of us who have to pay for it don't. Isn't that intriguing that the very rich are very interested in the very poor, while the middle class is not so interested in making sure that the very poor take any more of their tax money? I guess that's how it works. But then again, you have to be an Obermensch to understand how the rich think, because they think differently than you and I. in that they use your money to advance their social causes. And there's a reason for it. That's how they wind up as overmenschen. That's the way it is. But you see, God sees the truth but waits. In the end, he gets them all. He gets us too. But we hope that the overmensch get a little worse treatment than we do at the end. Of course, there's no such guarantee. I've seen the good die young, and I've seen the good die horribly, and I've seen the bad live long, and the bad live well. So, having said all of that, let's move on to talk radio. Wouldn't it be nice if there really was justice on Earth? Wouldn't it be nice if everything you learned when you were a kid, that bad deeds are punished and good deeds are rewarded? Wouldn't life be wonderful if you could believe in Santa Claus? All that stuff that you learned in the pew, wouldn't that be great if you could actually believe it? That in this life, the bad get punished and you get rewarded? I don't know, but when I see a five-year-old kid dying of leukemia without hair, screaming for his mother, I don't know, there's something wrong with that picture. When you go into a ward of children with cancer, there's something wrong with that picture. They can't all have done something so bad to have gotten cancer at such early ages, could they? Then, of course, the libs believe in karma, and they would say that they did something bad in a past life, and then they go on with their Prozacian ways. But for those of us who don't think that way, it's kind of painful how that disease is not talked about. How come you don't hear that childhood cancer is an epidemic? How come you never see pictures of children with cancer in the media? Why is there no sympathy for American children dying of cancer in the back wards? Why do you never see those pictures? Why is there only sympathy for, let us say, illegal aliens? Or, well, others, certainly not children. Why are children the most ignored component of American life today? Why don't politicians ever talk about family life or family values? Why is marriage never rewarded in America? Why is married life never supported by our political class? Why is the swinging lifestyle sort of winked at by the political class, while the married life is sort of rejected by them, even though they're basically all old white men and they're almost all married? Why do you never hear about their wives and children? Why do men not talk about their wives and children with pride anymore in public life? How come that's sort of gone by the way of the Dorch? Have we passed the Dorch to that extent? See, I'm having a good time today, as you can well see. I mean, I can tell you to go by Michael Savage, to go by Bandit Britain, but I'm not going to tell you to do that, because either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. Now, if you do it, it won't change my lifestyle, and if you don't do it, it won't change my lifestyle. So, therefore, I'm free at last. And since I'm free at last, I can talk about anything else, including passing the Dorch. I can't get over that. Pass the Dorch. Kennedy passed the Dorch to who? What is Obama doing on his vacation? Can anyone answer me why he's on a vacation? What has he done that's so valuable so far? Let's see. He bailed out Goldman Sachs. He bailed out Citibank. He destroyed General Motors. He rewarded the unions. Has he achieved anything yet? Unemployment is way up. Banks are failing. The economy's about to be exposed for what it is. The dollar is worth about 20% less than it was when he took office. Now, it is true he inherited $1 trillion in debt from George Butch. George Butch left him with $1 trillion in debt. There's no question about it. But how do you resolve $1 trillion in debt by making it $3 trillion? Does anyone have an answer to that one? Or do you have to be a member of the Obermensch to understand how those mechanics work? In other words, if you inherit debt and you want to balance the books, do you incur more debt? Or is that only something you can understand if you don't speak English very well and you say Dorch instead of Torch? And you married into money for the name and the money, and therefore money doesn't really matter to you. You just marry someone else with money. It doesn't make sense to me. In other words, if I were broke because of debt I had incurred over an 8-year period, the first thing I would do is cut back on expenses. I wouldn't increase them. I wouldn't go and buy a house 3 times as big for triple the mortgage and go buy a new airplane, but that's what Obama did. He said, let's see, I inherited a house that's broke, so in order to fix this deficit, I'm going to borrow more money and buy a bigger house that I don't own? And I'm going to give more people who are not qualified for mortgages? Does that make sense to you, or do you have to actually be in Washington to understand that? I guess you have to be a member of the Obermensch. Does anybody know who this character is who called Ted Kennedy an Obermensch? Doug Brinkley? Anybody ever hear of him? I never heard of him. Missouri John, quickly, who was this guy?
Doug Brinkley
is the historian who wrote Tour of Duty, which was John Kerry's authorized.
Oh, he's the scribe of choice for the Obermensch. Ah, very famous individual, I suppose.
Savage.
Mourn when a man dies. Does that mean that all criticism must end forever? Are we not allowed to mention anything about Chappaquiddick or Mary Jo Kopechne? We can't say the word? I think anyone who's accused of, anyone who says Mary, I think that this should be outlawed. I think that for a few years, at least, any word that begins with cheh. In other words, I think that if anyone starts to say the word cheh, cheh, you don't know what they're going to say. They could say Chappaquiddick. And that's just impolite amongst the Obermensch. And I think that, I believe that there should be a law passed immediately by the Obama administration that if anyone starts to use the word, any word that begins with cheh, it could be chaps, it could be chapstick, or it might even become Chappaquiddick, and there you are. And you don't want to hear the word Chappaquiddick because it'll unravel Obamacare, which is now Kennedy Care. And so, therefore, I think that there should be a ban on any word that begins with cheh. Any word that has CH in it, well, you might let them say something with a CH. But the minute it goes into CHA, that's the end of it. Anyone who does that should be reported immediately to Obama's First Amendment killers in the White House. I think that's the important thing. Chastity, I don't know if you're allowed to. Think of all the words that would be eliminated if you couldn't say cha in America. The minute you hear someone say cha, there'd be a special 911 number you could call. And you could report to the White House that somebody started to use the word Chappaquiddick, and they should be investigated by the Department of Homeland Investigations, or Department of Kennedy Inquisition, or something like that. Because you're not an Ubermensch, and you're liable to destroy his legacy. And I think that then maybe we should cut this cha. Don't ever say the word cha about anything. What if you say cha? What if you're in the Air Force and you're just discussing flying a jet, and you say, well, the way we protect ourselves, sir, is by releasing cheh, and then you're immediately stopped and reported to the Obama minions, most of whom are illiterates from the gutters of Oakland, who are just communists who hate America. We're now inside the White House, of course. They could come and investigate you. They could bring men in with boots and guns, because you're not a member of the fawning media lackeys like Mr. Doug Brinkley. You got to remember that Kennedy opened the borders as early as 1965. You shouldn't forget that. But don't ever say, cha, Chappaquiddick. You must remember what he said in 1965 when he passed the Kennedy Immigration Reform Act. He actually said, this Immigration Reform Act, despite what demagogues are saying, will not change the demographics of America. You should forget that. And you should forget that he voted for late-term abortion, infanticide. You should forget that. And you should forget that he voted no on a constitutional ban on flag desecration. That's because he believes flag desecration is an expression of freedom. You gotta remember these things. You remember that he voted no on banning affirmative action hiring with federal funds because he believes in affirmative action. He never needed affirmative action. He just needed an affirmative bootlegger. He voted yes on allowing illegals to participate in Social Security. Well, that's important. Even though they don't pay into it, they should be able to take out of it. That's the American way. He voted yes on allowing illegals to participate in Social Security. As I said, even though they don't put into it, they do take out of it. And that's the important thing, is to bankrupt it. And so now that the Soros-run media sets about on anyone who dares disclose the truth about this gentleman, as in the Soviet show trial, persecution should fall upon anyone who refuses to repeat the party line that the great lion of the left must be praised. You must praise him at all times. You must continue to praise him. You must never refer to his recklessness or his record of destructive social engineering, or else, well, one of the gents from the gutters of Oakland who are now inside the White House might come down with a squad to investigate you, or even the woman who passes the Dorch. Chicago, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I believe I know what a Dorch is.
What is a Dorch?
I believe it's a hammer and sickle.
So you mean she wouldn't be a bedfellow. What do you call a woman who's in bed with you politically? That's interesting. Are they bedfellows or bed matrons. The bed matron. The bed matron, the liberal bed matron, we're going to call her, Arianna Huffington. I've coined a new phrase. Arianna Huffington, the liberal bed matron of the liberal establishment, has used the word passing the dorch when talking about Ted Kennedy passing it to Obama. And she was angry that the people didn't respect the fact that we didn't immediately pass socialized medicine. Did you catch that, Tom?
Yes, I did, and it makes me wonder, why is she so interested in socialized
medicine? I don't know. She's a very wealthy woman. Why does she care about socialized medicine primarily for illegal aliens? Everyone else has, by and large, everyone else can get any care they need by going into an emergency room. Why would a very wealthy woman care about that? I don't know. Is it social justice, Tom, that I'm missing?
No, I don't think so. I think it's...
I mean, I'm a former welfare worker. I'm a former social worker. I'm a former school teacher. I've actually worked amongst the poor, and I've seen so much abuse, it's astounding to me. Not of the poor. Abuse of the system by the fake poor. In fact, they live better than I did when I was a social worker. I guess if you marry into money and you've never worked a day in your life, you've just gone to cocktail circuit parties, you can be worried about passing a dorch.
Exactly. She's not there.
But does a dorch in your mind looks like a hammer and sickle?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'll tell you. You know what I'm going to do for you, Tom, because you have such a good sense of humor? I'm going to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain when it comes out. Okay, stay in the line. Chicago, Pete, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Savage. Do you think that Kennedy is so infatuated with Obama to the point where he backstabbed the Clintons in his endorsement? Because Kennedy's own historic ineptitude and inadequacy to be a senator was finally eclipsed by Obama, who's even more unemployable in the private sector, and he
That's right.
to be president.
But yeah, it's interesting. Why did Kennedy not support Hillary, is what you're saying, and support this unknown man from Chicago?
I think
it's what you're saying. It's an interesting question.
I think Obama was the only man to ever... In a strange way, legitimize Kennedy's candidacy.
I think there's something less logical. I mean, let's look at Obama is from Chicago, right? After Kenya. He went from Kenya to Chicago or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I'm just using the conservative timeline. Kenya, Chicago. We know about the steps in between. We know about Hawaii and Indonesia. Okay. But we're doing a quick study. So Kenya to Chicago, right? Now, what does Chicago have around it that the Deep South doesn't? A lake to Canada, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the legacy, the historical background of Ted Kennedy and his family fortune, it's related to lakes, isn't it?
Right, right.
Right? In other words, if there were no lakes, there would be no fortune. And so therefore, I think Kennedy, on an emotional level, went with the man who was closest to a lake. Hillary had no lakes near her.
Well,
Come on, I'm trying to be funny. I mean, is any of this working? Folks, make believe we're in a room together. Is this funny or not? I think it's funny. I'm using a certain... I'm the only one doing it. I'm enjoying it. I hope you are. If I were in a large classroom, let's say there are 1,000 of you or whatever, and this was a hot day, even though the air conditioning is on, you're bored, you can't wait to get to the boardwalk, you want to do your ready. You can't wait for Labor Day for the barbecue, even though it's a week and a half away. When is Labor Day? I'm planning a barbecue. I'm not even going to go to it. I'd like to give one and not be there because I'm always unhappy after I give it. I don't understand that. I plan these things, then I go to them, and I'm sorry I did it. I don't enjoy a minute of it. I get splattered with grease. All I do is cook. No one talks to you if you put on the barbecue. It's terrible. I'm not doing it again. I'm not doing another barbecue. No one I know does anything. They want me to do it. Hey, Mike, you're going to have the Labor Day barbecue? The answer is no. Why don't you have one and invite me? So, no, I may go to the Indian buffet and have lamb or something like that. Mikey had a little lamb is what it's going to come down to. They don't have special holidays or anything like that. They just, every day is a buffet, 7 days a week. Washington's birthday, Lincoln's birthday, Rosh Hashanah, it doesn't matter what it is. 7 days a week, there's a wonderful smorgasbord there. All the dal you can eat. What is dal? I had it for lunch today. It's disgusting. I don't like dal, huh? It's made of, like, dal skin. I know what it is. Come on, I know what it is. I just don't like the taste. It's gooey. Why? Because it's vegetarian. It's good for you. I mean, hamburger grease would be better than dal. You know that years ago when I was working for my doctorate in nutrition, I was shocked to read a study. I know I'm not allowed to mention that because it embarrasses Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. But years ago when I was working for my PhD, about when I had written my 20th book, I remember stumbling upon a study that this proves that vegetarianism is better for you than not being a vegetarian. I was shocked. I remember finding a study in 1977, 78. I didn't write it, of course, but I remember stumbling upon it. It was written by a scientist from India, and he studied something like 40,000 railway workers in India. That's right. 40,000 is a very large sample if you're into epidemiology. And he looked at the vegetarians versus the non-vegetarians, and he found out that the vegetarians had a higher heart attack rate in India amongst railway workers. Now, why did he pick railway workers? Because he wanted to eliminate occupation as a confounding factor or a confounding variable. In other words, they were all railway workers. You know what I'm saying? So you rule out occupation. So you say that had nothing to do with the heart attack, the work, the kind of work that they did. It'd be like doing a study of talk show hosts and heart attacks, let's say. Now, there aren't enough talk shows, but let's say there were 40,000 talk show hosts, let's just say, before the Obama gets through, there'll be four left, all on NPR. But let's say there were 40,000 talk show hosts, and you divided the groups into two. 20,000 are vegetarians. I don't think you'd find 50% of talk shows being vegetarian, but let's say you could. And the other 50% would be non-vegetarian. And you find out that the vegetarian talk show hosts have a higher rate of heart attack, significantly higher. Then you say, how could that be? The answer is ghee. That's, you're supposed to press the button. Because the vegetarians eat that horrible crap called ghee, which is clarified butter. The non-vegetarians ate like the lamb. They knocked down a lamb stew. A chicken they could grab and throw in the pot. They lived longer. They didn't get as many as heart attacks. So don't assume that just because you're a vegetarian that it's good for you and you run and look at the watch. You could also be taking that boat ride, that black boat ride, sooner than later. That dark ride from which no one returns. That's a nice thought on a Thursday. That should cheer up all of the marginal depressives listening to the show, that we all take that ride on that dark boat and never return. That's a great thought. That is just great. Oh, yeah. Hail Mary. I mean, that's really something. You got to go to sleep at night and think that it's not you, though. It doesn't apply to you. I can't watch the History Channel anymore because of it. The worst lately is the World War I footage, the documentary footage. They're releasing such good footage, you could see the people's faces. I mean, when it was blurry, the doughboys weren't real to me. 6 million died in a war for no reason at all. But when you actually see the guys, they look like your neighbor or you with a beard and like funny uniforms smoking in the trenches. You realize that they're all dead, even the guy. It's unbelievable. Where are they? Well, they took that ride across that very, very dark river, in that very dark boat, and they never returned. But as my mother said to me, God rest her soul, it can't be that bad because no one's ever come back to complain. And I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. If anyone has a pen and a pad, please go to Martha's Vineyard to write down the tail numbers of the airplanes flying in and out of Martha's Vineyard where the president is resting, and you will be able to piece together a story that Dominic Dunn would have loved. God rest his soul. I loved his shows. Never met the man, but I loved Dominic Dunn's Lifestyles of the Rich and Infamous, whatever he did. He had a certain flair and a style. I liked it. He actually got off on putting people down in a nice, you know what I mean? Kind of a nice old way. He did a good job of it. Anthony in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation.
As a 9-year dedicated listener to your show, I was personally offended by Glenn, Bill, and Rush having the nerve to not mention your name in the same sentence as the Fairness Doctrine. And the reason why I was offended is because they are ignoring not only 10 million loyal listeners, but 10 million potential voters.
I wasn't offended by Glenn Beck putting on, he put an onion in his handkerchief yesterday, and Rush did too, about the First Amendment. I thought it was the pregnant emptiness is what struck me, is that here they are talking about the First Amendment being threatened, free speech being threatened. They don't talk about Michael Savage being banned in Britain. Come on, my listeners must have heard that, right?
I think they all did. And I'll tell you what, the more I watch Fox News, the more I start to see they look more like an SNL comedy skit. It's becoming ridiculous.
Well, they do a good job. You know, you can't wipe off the whole network because of a few problems. We all have them, but By and large, they present a good side of it, but they banned me because of the leprechaun, pretty much. No, that's true. The leprechaun put down the iron shillelagh and told them that they can never mention Michael Savage because he's threatened by me. That's what I heard is going on. So I don't blame everybody on the network. They're afraid of the leprechaun.
Well, Dr. Savage,
the leprechaun scares them. That's all green. You know, he's a green talk show host. You know, anyone who's green is to be feared. Like, for example, I collect certain little things, silly things. So I have, what do you call these? Like knights from Schleich models. And they make like models of medieval knights with swords and shields. I thought they're made of metal. I went and bought a few about 2 months ago. I took it home and touched it. It's made of like neoprene. Then you look at Schleich, GmbH made it. It says Germany. Then it's made in China. There's only, what do you expect for $5.99 from a hobby shop? They're so incredibly authentic. But these neoprene knights remind me of the corporate talk show hosts on radio who talk about the First Amendment as though they really mean it, or talk about freedom of speech as though they really mean it. They're actually made of neoprene. They're not really they're not really knights in shining armor. They're made of neoprene. Don't you get it? That's all. The king has no clothes. In other words, yeah, well, liberals, this, or the guy, the king has no clothes. How could you talk about freedom of speech being threatened and cry on the radio, on television, and bring in the golfer and cry on them about Obama threatening you and not talk about a conservative who's actually been banned in Britain? How is it possible? So I'm not going to talk about it right now. You've heard the story already. I want to hear the Dortch piece again. Let me hear the Dortch.
Senator Kennedy passed the torch.
Or he passed the torch again. Senator Kennedy passed the torch to Obama, she said. And she's really worked up over health care now because, well, after all, she doesn't need it. She married into plenty of money and doesn't really have to work. And she has an organ of the radical left now that they all read or something. And she has plenty of dough. Why is she so concerned about health care? Well, I guess it's the right thing to do if you're into Dortches. Texas Dennis, welcome to the Savage Nation. Welcome, Dennis.
Out loud today. This is a great show.
You enjoyed yourself so far? No, I'm having a good time. I had a good rest yesterday. I loved watching Glenn Beck with the onion in his handkerchief crying over free speech without mentioning Michael Savage. It was great. So what are you calling about, Dennis?
That show. I'm positive a Dortch is a bottle of scotch.
Ah, so when she says he passed the Dortch, Senator Kennedy passed the Dortch, it's a code word amongst the Ubermensch for scotch?
Sure, for the scotch. You know,
or it could be fractured Greek American for scotch. That's right.
It could just be
fractured Greek American for scotch. Dortch. I didn't realize. It's similar in a way. The last few letters match. Maybe it's a way of saying it in the mountains above Athens. If you're into the Parthenon, you say Dortch instead of scotch. I'll have a Dortch on the rocks or something. I don't know really how it works over there. I'll never forget that one. Anyway, it's all in good fun. You don't want to hear about the war. No one knows why we're in Afghanistan or why we're doubling the troop levels or what we're doing there. I've asked it a few times, but I guess since the show is not heard by anybody, no one cares. And what else? U.S. moves toward formal cutoff of aid to Honduras. Now, there's a country threw out a communist dictator, and Obama wants the communist dictator back because his friend in Venezuela, Chavez, and his friend in Cuba wants the communist dictator restored to Honduras. But you don't see that. No, you're concerned with health care. The important thing is to not see what's really going on, that your government is an open friend of a communist dictatorship in Honduras and punishing a free democracy. And that's because the lady who says Dortch instead of scotch or the hammer or sickle is now on the side of the Dortch bearers. But then again, if you look back to old Greece and the history of the family, you know that the Kennedy legacy goes back to lakes and certain products that were moved across lakes during Prohibition. Yet there is still talk about certain occurrences in the old days of World War II in Greece. And I heard these things and I didn't believe them. But as the wheel turns and time moves forward, one comes to see that there may be a connection between the two. That is, between what went on amongst the partisans of Greece and some who came here and married into money in order to be able to pass the Dortch.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I'm going to give you something for free right now. I'm going to read an excerpt from my new book, Banned in Britain, which can only be purchased right now on michaelsavage.com. In it, you're going to read the secret emails which disclose how the entire British government colluded to destroy a man's name and reputation. I should say the liberal British government. This is the excerpt from Banned in Britain. I have led a rather elusive and reclusive life, but after being put on a list with murderers, racists, and terrorists, as a direct result of Jackie Smith's unilateral verdict that she pronounced on me without ever giving me a day in court, I had to get 24-hour security. I mention this because many, friends, enemies, and neutrals, sometimes assume that I'm enjoying the publicity. People hear me on the Savage Nation getting heated up in my own defense, which I hope you understand is more than understandable, and then they get the bizarre idea that I'm happy to be talking about this crisis in my life. That is simply wrong. We've talked about the possibility of the Obama administration putting the CIA on trial. This has happened before with disastrous results. Joining us now is KT McFarlane from ktmcfarlane.com to talk about what we can expect from this trial.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be back with you on the Savage Nation. You know, the Obama administration has just set in motion what could potentially result in the greatest threat to American security in a generation. The Attorney General's decision to open a criminal probe into alleged Bush-era CIA abuses, it won't stop there. It'll no doubt be followed by a zealous Speaker Pelosi and Senator Reid and congressional committees eager to join the hunt with public hearings of their own. You know, Michael, we have been to this movie before, and it ended in disaster. After the Vietnam War and Watergate, Congress launched a similar investigation into the CIA in 1975 and 6. It wasn't over torture, but whether the CIA was a rogue elephant in targeting foreign leaders for assassination. The Church Committee in the Senate and the Pike Committee in the House hauled in intelligence officials and, with the cameras running, forced them to reveal classified information or risk prosecution. The committee subpoenaed and then unilaterally declassified some of our nation's most sensitive intelligence documents. So Congress put the CIA on trial. And it may have started as an investigation into illegal CIA anti-war activities in the U.S., but it quickly expanded to include all aspects of CIA covert activities. Undercover intelligence officers were outed. Allied intelligence agencies, fearing their operations could be compromised, stopped sharing information with us. Foreign nationals who had fed information to us before suddenly got cold feet. And U.S. intelligence agents overseas had trouble recruiting, and existing networks dried up. In fact, one undercover American intelligence officer, Athens Station Chief Richard Welsh, was murdered after his name was published. And as a result, America's intelligence gathering ability, their human intelligence abilities, was eviscerated for a generation.
What do they have to rely on for info, then?
We emphasized satellite intelligence, which is called SIGINT, and used it to fill the gap left by the decimated spy networks, which are called HUMINT, for human intelligence. We focused on the Soviet military buildup of nuclear weapons and conventional forces, but failed to see anything else. And so we were blind when it came to seeing the things that only agents on the ground can detect. So the CIA failed to see the rise of Islamic fundamentalism, or the 1978 Iranian Revolution, which overthrew the Shah. In fact, U.S. intelligence report concluded at the time that, quote, the Shah was expected to remain actively in power over the next 10 years. Well, he was overthrown by a coup led by Ayatollah Khomeini just a few months after that. The CIA failed to detect rumblings in the communist bloc, which led to the split in the Warsaw Pact and ultimately the collapse of the Soviet Empire in the 1980s. They failed to see the rise of radical jihad in the 1980s or to notice when it morphed from being anti-Soviet to anti-American. And most crucially, because we didn't have human intelligence, we didn't see Al-Qaeda coming. We didn't know about their plans in the 1990s to attack the West with suicide bombers, and especially their two plots to blow up the World Trade Center. And then to make things even worse, after the September 11th attacks, our human intelligence failed once again, most notoriously in overestimating Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. And now that we've all picked apart that data of the last 8 years, we realize just how feeble our human intelligence gathering efforts were. So we've started rebuilding the CIA in the last years, 8 years, and we focus specifically on human intelligence. So to start investigating the CIA publicly and now, with the whole world watching, would be disastrous yet again. It would risk doing the same damage to American intelligence that we did 30 years ago. It would rip apart those spy networks and agents we have carefully begun rebuilding in the last 8 years.
What about all this high-tech surveillance equipment we have?
High-tech surveillance and satellites, well, they're great at seeing nuclear enrichment plants or tanks or large armies massing or intercontinental ballistic missiles. But, Michael, they are lousy at seeing guys in caves in Afghanistan plotting to blow up the World Trade Center and sending messages out by couriers on donkeys. The Obama administration's plans to investigate the CIA, which will no doubt be joined this fall by congressional hearings. In fact, Speaker Pelosi has already talked about investigating the CIA, which, as you'll remember, she claimed lied to her. Well, these hearings would threaten to eviscerate the CIA and the human intelligence gathering arm once again. And what that will do going forward will leave us blind, once again, to small terrorist cells plotting great destruction. Michael, we are never going to see a dirty bomb in a locker in Lower Manhattan from satellites. We're only going to know about it in advance if we've got spies on the ground that uncover the plot before it happens. So, this is not the time to put American intelligence on trial. If there are things that were wrong that were committed, investigate them privately. Deal with them privately, punish people privately, but don't do it on the front page of the mainstream media, because it will do such enormous damage to American security for the next decade.
KT, thanks for the report. Well, Ted Kennedy has died, and immediately the entire leftist media establishment gushes forth uncritical tributes. Now, I've told you before that the left in America is actually totalitarian. There is no better proof of this than the comment that so-called historian Douglas Brinkley made about Ted Kennedy. I didn't make it. Listen to him.
The fact of having dogs with him and playing catch all the time and going to see Ted Kennedy, he always felt like you were going to see a kind of uber mensch. He was so nice to young people or people who were upwards in their careers and had questions. I'm impressed historically about his Senate office. It became, during the 1960s and 70s protest period in Washington, D.C., kind of the place, if you got tear gassed, you'd go to his office to get water and recoup.
Did you hear that? Ubermensch? Ted Kennedy was an Ubermensch? Do you know where that word comes from? It's German for overman. It was a word the Nazis used to describe the members of the pure Aryan race. And now leftist psychos use it to describe Ted Kennedy? Ubermensch? This is an illness. It's a mental disorder. Listen to more of this.
The tributes are pouring in from around the world for Senator Kennedy. He has lost his battle with brain cancer. The man known as the Lion of the Senate passing away.
The greatest, I suppose, most prolific senator when it comes to legislation in the history of this republic.
The liberal lion of the Senate.
Going to see Ted Kennedy, you always felt like you were going to see a kind of uber mensch. He was so nice to young people or people who were upwards in their careers and had questions.
Kennedy's voice, his presence, his force has been deeply felt.
He was considered one of the most effective lawmakers of the past few decades.
It's fierce of a partisan as you could be, but a guy that seemed incapable of hatred.
Pick a major issue this country has dealt with in the last half century, and Ted Kennedy has been in the thick of it.
the greatest United States senator of our time.
47 historic years.
He was passionate about was human rights and civil rights anywhere.
The greatest senator of our time.
The liberal lion of the Senate.
Kennedy at least touched and partially authored, 2,500 major pieces of Senate legislation.
The lion of the Senate.
And here's another one saying that they have to exploit his death to get socialized medicine passed.
Absolutely, I really do. And I also think that the White House and many in the Senate may actually learn that, as Ted Kennedy said in 1980, warning the Democratic Party that if they abandon their core values, they are going to lose. Well, once again here, Democrats are in danger of abandoning their core values, watering down what they stand for, and losing. So that's really a great teachable moment for the Democratic Party.
This is not classical liberalism. This deranged ideology is a clear and present danger to your freedom.
Savage.
We have on the Savage Nation website, michaelsavage.com, a link to another well-done article by Ellis Washington entitled Lockerbie Bomber Praised, Savage Hated. He joins us now to talk about this. Ellis, give us some background on this article.
Well, Michael, once again, thank you for inviting me to appear on your wonderful show. Like you, Michael, about 6 days ago, when we heard the news that Scotland was releasing Muslim terrorist bomber of Flight 130, the Lockerbie bomber, on medical grounds, and sending him back to his native country of Libya, we were all in shock. And I listen to you, and I just appreciate you so much, Michael, for venting for me and for the entire Savage Nation, because I literally wanted to jump through the TV set. I was just so outraged at this hero's welcome, that this Muslim fanatic, this murderer who killed 270 innocent people, was now, being received like he was a war hero. And so you had kind of given me the idea, equating this bomber, the Lockerbie bomber, and the praise he was receiving with the utter silence regarding your situation being banned in Britain. So that's kind of where I took my cue from, Michael.
You bring up a wonderful quote about the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. That's true. And that seems to be the ugly truth about the media right now. Why do you think that is?
Well, Michael, as is my custom with virtually every article that I write, I always try to give the reader an epigram or some words of wisdom, some aphorism or proverb that kind of encapsulates the gist of what I'm trying to say in the article. And today's article, Michael, I borrowed the words of that great Nobel Prize-winning laureate, Elie Wiesel, who said that the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. The opposite of art is not ugliness, it's indifference. The opposite of faith is not heresy, it's indifference. And the opposite of life is not death, it's indifference. And Michael, I thought that quote really captured the essence of what you were going through. Here we have, you can't think of two more polar opposite figures. A Muslim terrorist murder responsible for the killing of 270 people in cold blood in the Lockerbie bombing over 20 years ago, and you, an authentic American patriot and admitted Anglophile who has spent his entire career trying to expose fascist dictators and Stalinist tactics here in our own government, you're being ignored. It's like Alice in Wonderland, Michael. It's completely opposite. So I tried to just draw that inference, almost like the refrain of a song, that the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference.
You talk about the Chicago political machine, which is Machiavellian to the core. You mentioned what the Germans call Schadenfreude. Please explain what you mean by that.
As I said, regarding the Chicago way, I said that Michael Savage's name being on the enemies list was not by accident, and that this is pure Chicago thug politics. I mean, it's right out of the Saul Alinsky playbook, Michael. And I just wish that the media, you know, NBC, ABC, CBS, and the rest of the state-controlled media, as well as Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, and Fox News, I wish they would get off their butts and start making these analogies and come to your defense. It's just really ridiculous. But the Chicago way thug politics is launched against you, Michael, because I said you are the most singular voice against fascist tactics of the Chicago way in American media. And that's true, Michael. I can think of no other singular voice that has been more vociferous, more consistent against the Chicago way thug politics than you. And regarding the Schadenfreude reference, Michael, Schadenfreude, for many of the Savage Nation listeners, is a German word that means where somebody takes pleasure in the suffering of another. Theodor Adorno, who's a philosopher and a sociologist, defined it this way. Schadenfreude is largely unanticipated delight in the suffering of another, which is cognized as trivial and or appropriate. And so what that means, Michael, is that Obama and his minions in the GOP and the RNC, Rush, Fox, et cetera, they almost knew that they would take delight in your suffering, your the terrible tragedy that's been waged against you by being banned in Britain without just cause. And so rather than be upstanding man, rather than being strong and a moral character and coming to your defense, I called them effete harlequins, Michael. And I even referenced them, compared them to the tragic figure of the Dorian Gray character from Oscar Wilde's famous book, Dorian Gray, where this very beautiful man was so transfixed by his own beauty that even as his beauty was very beautiful and not changing from day to day outwardly, inwardly, he was rotting from the inside. And that's how I looked at these people in the conservative media and the state-controlled media. They're so transfixed by their own power, by their own celebrity, that they are unconcerned or indifferent, to use Elie Wiesel's words, with the plight of another, because they're so worried about themselves. It's really outrageous, Michael. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine and men of strength to mingle strong drink, which justify the wicked for reward and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. So, Michael, that scripture fits you to the teeth.
Thanks for the insightful article, Dr. Washington, and thanks again for being on the Savage Nation. Amazing article from Gerald Warner in England, where he writes, more people were killed at Chappaquiddick than at Three Mile Island. He saw it on a car bumper sticker. And then he writes, Senator, you were expelled from Harvard for cheating. Then you left a woman to drown in your car at Chappaquiddick. What makes you think you have what it takes to be president? That was the opening question of an interview with the late Senator Edward Kennedy during his unsuccessful bid to secure the Democratic nomination for the U.S. presidency. Of course, they would never ask that today. It might equally now serve as an obituary, writes Gerald Warner. The answer to that embarrassing question, of course, can be given in one word: entitlement. The Kennedy dynasty has long assumed a divine right to high office and privilege that accords ill with the spirit of the American Constitution. We saw it again earlier this year with the attempt to shoo in the totally inexperienced Caroline Kennedy as successor to Hillary Clinton representing New York in the Senate. It failed. The Kennedy clan, as used to be said of effete Chinese dynasties, has exhausted the mandate of heaven. Now that Edward Kennedy has died, the liberal establishment and its media acolytes have the onions and the handkerchiefs to orchestrate a show of grief over the loss of a great leader, as Barack Obama ludicrously termed this discredited playboy. No doubt the modernist Catholic Church in America will bury this proponent of federally funded abortion with full honors. Despite his having led a life of extravagant degeneracy, the liberal Catholic caucus of the Pelosi-Biden orientation will fervently claim him as their own. Gerald Warner continues. He says, in Britain, Kennedy will be remembered for his championing of IRA terror on the same knee-jerk anti-British principles that inspired his father, Ambassador Joseph Kennedy, to support Hitler. Yet Kennedy was awarded an honorary knighthood, just as America gave him its Presidential Medal of Freedom. What for? For being a Kennedy, of course. The Kennedy humbug was incisively deflated by a Republican bumper sticker that memorably claimed, more people were killed at Chappaquiddick than at Three Mile Island. Another succinctly said, no one drowned at Watergate. What is it that motivates people in so-called democratic societies to create reverential myths around hollow idols with feet of clay? America is the one country on earth where only the rich are socialists. The East Coast tribe will now indulge in false hero worship and wild hyperbole about a man who, if his surname had been anything other than Kennedy, would have provoked widespread distaste and social ostracism. This time, the liberal elite is burying not just an individual, but the political aspirations of a dynasty whose objectives were incompatible with the best interests of America, so wrote Gerald Warner in the UK Telegraph. Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. Matt Towery wrote, the true Savage was released while Savage Talk Host was banned. He said, where is the compassion for a man who has harmed no one? Or do you reserve your compassion for bona fide savages? He's addressing this to the British government. You got to read this article. I didn't write it. Chappaquiddick, end of one Ted Kennedy, beginning of another from the New York Daily News. Apparently they haven't forgotten Mary Jo, as James Taranto of the Wall Street Journal wrote when Mr. Kennedy died. Mary Jo Kopechne could not be reached for comment. And, of course, that's true. Now, what if, just what if this man's name was not Kennedy and this had happened to him and he'd been a Republican? Do you suppose he would be lionized upon his passing? And what about the real Teddy Kennedy? Who was he? Does a man who spent his entire political life destroying the fundamental tenets of American morality become miraculously rehabilitated on his passing? I don't know. Read the article on MichaelSavage.com. And while you're there, read Lockerbie Bomber Praised and Savage Hated. By the way, the Richardson probe was killed by Obama, who? The decision not to pursue charges against New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson in a year-long probe of possible pay-to-play scheme was made to stop it, was made by a top Justice Department official. That's right. There's your fairness. There's a great article, Lawyers About to Smother the War on Terror. Toyota has closed its only West Coast plant. Students' take-home assignment is census kits. A Fed official says the real unemployment rate is 16%. This is unbelievable stuff. It's unbelievable. And Representative Jim Moran of Virginia demanded to see his constituents' ID before allowing a town hall question. Isn't that great? Democracy is great. And a judge has struck down a state law that required the Kentucky Office of Homeland Security to stress God from an anti-terror law. I guess it's no longer God and God we trust. It's the rats at the ACLU we trust. It's all up on MichaelSavage.com. Don't miss it. Any topic is fair game here. Okay, Columbus, Ohio, Fatty. Fatty, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael. I haven't read your book, so forgive me if you've addressed this already, but how do you define culture and more specifically American culture? It seems like it changes, right. I mean, pretty much every few years or so.
No, it actually doesn't. The people change, but the culture doesn't change. That's the whole, you see, this is the problem that most people are having. They think that multiculturalism should change America. It should not change America. The core values of American culture are set in stone. The people change, the racial makeup changes. But in the old days, they would assimilate to the American culture. Now, what is the American culture? I have defined this. The American culture, when I say borders, you know what that is. When I say language, you know what that means, English only. When I say culture, many of you have been hoodwinked into believing that we're a multicultural nation, which we are not. We are a nation of many races and many cultures. That is true. It has been true from the beginning. But in the past, people would come over and become Americans. Now they come over and they want you to become them. They want you to speak Spanish. They want you to act Muslim. They want you to give up going to the church and going to a mosque. this is not going to go on in this country much longer. We're going to have a revolution in this country if this keeps up. These people are pushing the wrong people around. Just watch Extreme Fighting and you'll see what the white male is capable of. That's all I can say to you. Just understand why extreme fighting is becoming popular in this country. Because the rage has reached a boil. If they keep pushing us around, and if we keep having these schmucks running for office, catering to the multicultural people who are destroying the culture of this country, there will be a revolution in this country. Guaranteed. The people, the white male in particular, let me talk specifically. The white male in particular, the one without connections, the one without money, has nothing to lose, and you haven't seen him yet. You haven't seen him explode in this country. And he's still the majority, by the way, in case you don't know it. He is still the majority. No one speaks for him. Everyone craps on him. People use him for cannon fodder. And he has no voice whatsoever. He has nobody speaking for him. So he goes to these extreme fighting events. Take a look at them, and you'll see what the white male is capable of. And you're going to find out that if you keep pushing this country around, you'll find out that there's an ugly side to the white male that has been suppressed for probably 30 years right now. But it really has never gone away. But that doesn't answer your question. What is the culture? It's very simple. The culture of this nation is built upon several founding documents. One, I'm sure the ACLU will find a problem with. That's called the United States Constitution. That's a founding document. The Bill of Rights, founding document. The Bible, that's correct. The Bible, the rules of the Bible. The entire nation was built around the rules of the Bible, not the rules of the psychos, not the rules of the perverts, not the rules of the atheists, not the rules of the psychos, not the rules of the perverts, not the rules of the atheists, but the Christian rules, the Christian Bible built upon the Jewish Bible. So if you want to ask me what the founding documents are, those are the founding documents, and that's the culture of America. Now, did I say that Buddhism shouldn't be practiced? No. Did I say Hinduism shouldn't or couldn't be practiced? No. Did I say that Islam shouldn't or couldn't be practiced? No. But in the past, the other religions were practiced, but they did not try to dominate the nation, which is fundamentally a Christian nation. It is not a Buddhist nation. It is not a Hindu nation. It is not a Muslim nation. This is primarily, has always been and always will be, primarily a Christian nation. The rest of the people certainly are welcome to practice their religions, but they're not welcome to deny Christianity its place in the family of man. Now, I've given you a long, long story on this, but there are other documents that go back to the Magna Carta, but that would require an education beyond the sixth grade, so I'll stop using large words. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
I don't like people who talk to their children cutesy. It makes me squirm. You ever hear these parents talk to their children with, like, cute talk? That's why the child winds up a psycho. You know, I got to tell you a little trick about child rearing. In my opinion, one man's opinion, and I haven't done so bad. Speak to them as you would an adult, and they will grow up more intelligent, and they will be more competent younger. You ever listen to the people with the children? I love the ones who take them to a restaurant and give them a lesson in front of you to show how smart they are, how smart the child is with the pencils and the coloring book. You're spending $29 for a plate of spaghetti that costs 4 cents, and there they are next to you. The guy with the ponytail, he's 63, with a 30-year-old girl he met somewhere at a club. And right away, a year later, they have the baby. And 4 years later, ready the coloring book and the crayons in the pasta palace. And they're all set up. They got the whole thing. They got the backpack. They got the diaper at your next table. And they got the coloring book and the crayons, which should be outlawed in restaurants. It's not ding-dong school. Not everything is a ding-dong school. There was a time, and I raised children. I wasn't allowed in certain restaurants with the children when they were young. I didn't like it. But I understood it. People didn't want to be disturbed by children. Now, if they get sued, if they say to the people, you know what, we'd rather you not change doo-doo at the table, right away they call ACLU and or a lawyer like an ACLU, like a smarter one than an ACLU lawyer, the brother who went into private practice with the same mentality. Marvin goes into the ACLU because he's stupid. And Barry goes into the private practice and sues. But they're the same mentality. Two heads of the same hydra. That's it, the coloring books in the restaurant. How do you spell Louisiana, Louise? Very good. And then the mother claps at the death. Yeah, this is where you're sitting having a romantic meal. $29.95 for the pasta al ripoffo. Antipasto consisting of a piece of old rotten cheese from Brooklyn that they couldn't sell to the Italians in New York because they know better. So they ship it to San Francisco. That's $9.95 for one little piece of mozzarella cheese and a tomato. They give it an Italian name. $9.95 with a tomato and one little piece of cheese that the Italians rejected on the wharf. Even the wharf rats rejected it, but they can sell it in San Francisco. And $29.95 for pasta al creato. I don't mind it, all right, but you're going in for the ambience. No one's there for the food. They're in for the ambience. But the coloring book is there right away. And the lessons you have to listen to. Do you ever hear these lessons at these tables? Does this go on in Louisiana or only in the major cities? That you have to listen to these impossible parents. I never talk cute to the children. Okay, I'm a product of my upbringing. Harsh, Spartan-like. Don't be cute. I don't like cute. No jokes. Just get back to work. No matter what I did, I tried to entertain my family. All right, get back to work. Stop the entertainment. He knew I was trying to, like, wiggle out of work by entertaining him. All right, that's very good. Now get back to it. No radio. On the way into work, I swear to God, if I was, like, driving in his car, I don't know how old I was. He didn't want the radio on. If I tried to put the radio on because it was horrible, sitting next to your father in a car on the way to work, it was going to be a horrible day in a disgusting market all day long, which I didn't want to do. I didn't want to go to begin with, but I didn't say anything. Okay, he needed me there. That was the way it was done. I didn't have any option anyway. It was like a little prison camp. But all right, so you sit in the right seat like a dummy, your hands folded on your lap, and nothing, not a word, mum. The whole ride. BQE, the Kosciuszko Bridge, the stink of the pork dying there, the Trun's Meat Market, where the eye goes out. You think that you ran over a skunk, but there are no skunks in Williamsburg. That packing plant in August was enough, Mike. You talk about a weapon of mass destruction. The Trun's Meat Packing Plant in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, in the 50s, was a WMD. That's why rents were low in those days. The floors were cockeyed with linoleum that when a dog would urinate in the bedroom, it would run into the living room. Because the floors were old. But that's the way it was. No one complained. Today you got the same losers who can't live in Manhattan. They live there now. They discovered the charm of Williamsburg. Oh, I really love it over here. It's really great. You know, it's right near the overpass, and I like the factory area. Nobody ever wanted to live there. Even when it was in its heyday, nobody wanted to live there. But the point I'm making is a little different. So if you sit in the car, you're next to your father driving to work, and, you know, you can't say anything. There's nothing to say. He's grim. He's white. His hands are white-knuckled on the wheel because he's gone in again another horrible day to make a living. Nothing was fun. Nobody worked in those days for fun. This was an evolution of the Dr. Spock generation. Oh, find what's fun and pursue it. Pursue what's fun. To my father, nothing was fun. It was grim. Horrible. It was like Grimm's fairy tales. Came over, work. Drop dead and move on. It's in the ground. In the ground. That's it. Next case. Next generation. There was no fun from another world. They didn't know what the word fun was. So he's driving to work. The hands are like white knuckles. And I'm sitting here. So my hand reaches. The left hand reaches for the radio dial. Like to punch a button in. No, no radio. So what do you mean no radio? I don't want music. Why? Never mind why. This is not entertainment. It's work. So, all right. So work has to be torture. I get it. All right. That's why I'm in the radio business. I was made for this. What I'm getting at is he didn't like cute. If he saw people, and I'm the same way, unfortunately, I become him in essence. This is how it is. All the years I resisted becoming him, I came, a long time ago I became my father. I admit it. There must be something to it. Worked for him. It's worked for me so far. But he didn't like cute. People who talk cute to the children. You know, the guy was 100% right. Let's say I'm talking generally, 9 out of the 10 couples did not talk to their children in because it was like embarrassing. Anyone who did that, the child either wound up in San Francisco wearing a pink set of tights at 19 expressing himself, or the girl wound up married to her sorority sister. 9 out of 10, they never wound up okay. None of them became anything. That's true because of the liberal upbringing. Liberalism not only is a mental disorder, but it destroys children. You need to raise children the old-fashioned way. I don't say hurt them. I never got hit. He didn't hit me. Just verbal abuse. It worked better. The Kennedy legacy, Ted Kennedy tribute, had very poor ratings last night on ABC. People preferred ABC's Wipeout and a show called Bones over Ted Kennedy, the last brother. And apparently America's Next Top Model did better than Ted Kennedy, the last brother. And let's see, at 10 p.m., a Law and Order episode beat Remembering Ted Kennedy. So, I mean, if you want to put ratings, you know, I realize that ratings are not written for or not based upon the Ubermensches. The Ubermensches, of course, would be offended by the fact that there was even any show on other than a tribute to Ted Kennedy. You've got to remember that. The Ubermensches know more than you do. And the important thing is to look forward to the day when the men working for Obama, previous street felons and thugs who are now inside the White House with white shirts and ties, once they get control of the FCC, soon there will be nothing permitted except tributes to Democrats and tributes to Democrat programs. And at that point, of course, the ratings will be super high and it'll prove that the people love them. So we only have a few months or years to wait for those days. But to be fair to the discussion, I will let you decide what Ted Kennedy's true legacy is. I mean, he wasn't all bad. Some would demonize him and say because he killed a young girl at Chappaquiddick, he's all bad. Or he cheated at Harvard by using a poor student to take an exam for him, and the poor student got thrown out, as did Kennedy, but Kennedy was allowed in while the poor student was never allowed back in. That sort of defines him. But you can't let that stick to a man for the rest of his life. He was welcome in Britain right until the very end. Even though he killed an actual girl, he was welcome in Britain. He didn't create any intercommunity violence when he said in 1965 that the Kennedy Immigration Reform Act of 1965 would not change the demographics of America. That didn't create any intercommunity tension in this country, and that's why Jackie Smith permits him into England to this day. It's a matter of politics as to what really creates intercommunity tension, not a matter of what actually does it. And while the British government might release an actual terrorist who killed 260 people, a true terrorist, it's important to make sure that somebody who expresses conservative opinion is declared the real terrorist, because that's the way Ubermensch work. And since the rest of us are not considered to be worthy of the discussion to begin with, we shouldn't even be considered Ubermensch. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.